And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to I'm Married, it's February, and we haven't done a podcast in about 5 weeks. So we figured with all the staff changes and some other things going on, it's probably time to hit record, Luke.
Yeah, it is time to hit record. I should mention that Derek Burns and I did a breakdown of the bowl game, and I think it went over swimmingly well to glowing reviews. Nobody in the world missed you, Ryan. We thought about doing this without you. I kid, of course.
I mean, you only half kid, but yeah. To be fair, you are the star of the show, and everybody knows it, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the reason people listen to this podcast is because of me. Okay. So housekeeping items to get through. I think this is kind of a housekeeping, get your affairs in order going into the 2023 season. We might do a wrap the bow on the 2022 season yet, but this is really more forward-looking because we're going to talk a lot about staff changes. This is, very common that staff changes happen at the very, very final, after the very, very final game of the 2022 season, even before bowl games, which we know happened for the Gophers even preceding the 2022 season when Kirk Shiraka came back. Now he's already left for Rutgers. Let's probably get into that. Anything you want to touch base on before we jump right into staff changes, Ryan?
Yeah, this is more so all the things that essentially happened in January, but trying to just catch you up on one succinct podcast about what does the staff look like now. They added another running back and some other various notes. So we're just trying to put a bow on it. Like Luke said, you'll get to know some of these names now, get to know, some of the new coordinators and all those different types of things. So that's what we're trying to provide today.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. And then I think we should note here, and we'll probably say it at the end again, Ryan, we're going to try something new here in the new year of 2023. We're always trying to improve this product that we're putting out. We won't really divulge what that'll be because things can change, but there's going to be some new kinds of episodes coming out here in the off season. We're going to try a couple of them, see how they work. Speculate at random on the message boards or the social media. So,
yeah, we're just trying to think of some different ways here in the abyss that is the off season, especially when PJ Fleck doesn't talk or doesn't allow anybody to talk. The second signing day just came and went, and I think he was the only Big Ten coach to not talk. Now, Minnesota didn't sign anyone, which is why I'm assuming he didn't talk, but it's an abyss, especially in this market if you're a Gopher football fan. So we're trying to think of some different ways. And to Luke's point, we're excited about some things that we got coming down the pipe. We're open to your feedback on them. But I know I'm excited to talk to some new people that haven't never been on this podcast.
Yeah, and money talks, Ryan. So if you want to sponsor one of those episodes or any of our off-season episodes, you have a business, you're welcome to do that. We haven't been working terribly hard to try and find people because we always can plug your podcast or your podcast. We can always plug your website, Ryan, of course. But in the end, if you want to plug your product, service, whatever you might have, your business, we're open to that. You can reach out, slide into the DMs of GGR. But okay, so Ryan, let's just get right into it. There's a lot of coaching turnover. I think we have to qualify all this conversation that we're going to have with, this is very normal in college football, there to be quite a bit of turnover. This isn't that strange. This is maybe a little bit more than normal for a PJ Fleck staff. But in general, this is not outside of the norm as I see it.
No, especially in this day and age. I mean, each one of these guys left for almost a different reason, more or less. And we'll get into each one of those reasons and we'll get into some of the things about the new guys. But it's not like there was a mass exodus because Fleck's a horrible person to work with. Yes. And contrary to what people try and tell me on the message boards, my favorite thing is when some select Gopher Illustrated posters try to mansplain to me why this happened. And I'm just, I know things probably more than most, especially on the subject of Gopher football. And then when you try and correct them on certain things, they just don't want to hear it. But yes, I'm not worried about the staff changes in terms of why they left. And I think that kind of leads us into the first one in terms of Kirk Shiraka leaving for Rutgers.
Yeah. So this is interesting. You messaged me saying, I think Kirk Shiraka is going to leave to my surprise.
Yeah, my honeymoon is when all this stuff breaks, but in terms of just like Kirk Shiraka leaves, Kenny Burns gets the job.
Yeah.
No, Kenny already got the job. It was Paul Haynes and Brick Haley. Yeah, that was the best part, was returning phone calls while my now wife was getting ready for dinner.
Yeah.
I got a 15-minute window to try and return phone calls. And I'm like, I'm trying to be on a honeymoon, and you need to stop bothering me.
Yeah, but the Kirk Shiraka one was funny because we had known, you know, because he left for Penn State that he had a desire to be on the East Coast for obvious family reasons. That's kind of where he's from. So it wasn't a huge surprise to me when you said, hey, I'm pretty sure Kirk's going to leave, and I think it's going to be Rutgers, to which I immediately messaged one of my coworkers who is a huge Rutgers fan, right? Borderline booster, et cetera. And he goes, oh, great. We hired a guy we already fired, right? Kirk Shiraka had been fired once before by Greg Schiano. And then when the money came out, the Rutgers fans are just kind of like pissed. All in all, you can get into the details, Ryan. I just thought it was hilarious that Rutgers hires someone they already fired who, frankly, he's worthy of the position, indefinitely being an offensive coordinator and probably worthy of being a higher one of the higher paid in the Big Ten. But I just think the whole thing is just kind of a funny, funny family story between Fleck, Schiano, and Shiraka.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, Kirk, again, I think Kirk gets more or less a bad rap here. Now, I understand that a lot of fans don't like him because they hated the offense, especially when Minnesota's, rush rate over expectation was one of the highest in all of college football last year. But you look at the points per game. I mean, it was about average last year in conference play. They were eighth in the Big Ten with 21 points per game. I think they were fourth when you factor in the non-conference. No, it's not exactly like the non-conference last year was anything to write home about. But here's what it comes down to. Why did Kirk Shiraka leave to go to a bad program in Rutgers? Peace and love to any Rutgers fans out here. But the perennial expectation out there is 4-8 or 5-7 in a good year is a bowl game. Like, so why does it happen? Well, you know what Kirk Shiraka likes? Money. You know what he got paid? $500,000 more a year, and it's all guaranteed money. So, Luke, let me ask you this.
Would I take that job? Absolutely.
Would you take a guaranteed $1.4 million, which would be in total 1.5 more than you were going to be making at Minnesota?
Oh, absolutely. I totally get that. And I know
worst job in theory in terms of like wins and losses. But the other thing I have to note here, Luke, is this is also, there's also a family component in all this. Kirk's daughter is in law school at Rutgers. His son, I believe, is now at Penn State. He's got all of his family out on the East Coast. And this is probably the last gig that Kirk Shiraka is going to have before he retires or becomes an analyst. And it's like, So the story being, Kirk Shiraka had in Rutgers had been talking in December.
Mm-hmm.
And what changed was Rutgers guaranteed all the 3 years. Plus they bumped it up to $1.4 million because he was set to make $900,000 at Minnesota this year. So he likes the money. He gets to go back to the East Coast. And again, that's what wins out here is money talks, and so does family connections. And so he had turned down Rutgers a couple of times before this, but then in early January, Schiano upped his offer, and Kirk said, I'm heading out to one of Luke's favorite places in Piscataway.
I mean, there has to be a component of like he missed the pizza or something like that, right? I think that's one of the things you have to be missing at this juncture. But no, I don't think anybody thinking logically about this would – be in Kirk Shiraka's shoes and not make that jump given his, his age, his recent experience at Penn State where he got let go. I just don't see, I don't see anybody not taking that opportunity. It just makes too much sense. So I think, Ryan, that's where we should really transition and look at where the offense is going to go here in Minnesota. And let's touch on Kenny Burns real quick, because I know you kind of brought him up. You know, we're all obviously very excited. We've talked about this a little bit. He gets his first head coaching gig at Kent State. I know you had mentioned previously that he had been a finalist at other jobs, etc. This had been something he'd been pursuing for some time. And I think it'll be good before we start talking about what the offense is going to look like next year to just, you know, cover all the departures. So Kenny Burns being the one going to Kent State and getting, you know, his first head coaching opportunity.
Yeah, he was a finalist back in November for the Arizona State job. He was one of the final three, ended up going to Kenny Dillingham, who was the Oregon coordinator who took the job. I think he was also an alum of that school. And then in the last coaching carousel back in 2020, after the 2021 season, he was in the final two, and he was the bridesmaid for the Nevada job. So he had been getting there. He'd been getting into the top group. And then finally, when the Kent State position came open, when Sean Lewis took the job out at Colorado as the offensive coordinator, he was in the top three in terms of Kenny was for the Kent State job. He got the job. And actually, one of the other finalists is now on staff at Minnesota, which we'll get to there in a little bit. So I'm happy for Kenny. It was about time. You know, when you look at the running backs that he's coached during his time at Western, Minnesota, they've obviously been very, very good, and it's one where he had been wanting to be a head coach for some time, so he gets his shot in the MAC. I don't think there's a more depleted roster in FBS football than Kent State, so he's going to have quite the rebuild job. So we'll see in like 2025, 2026 what ends up happening, because I don't know if you saw this as well. Kai Thomas
is going to
be heading out to Kent State.
He's going to have to sit out a year, though, right?
He is sitting out the 2023 season. He'll be eligible in 2024, but yeah, it didn't quite work out for him at Kansas, so he's going to head out to Kent State with Kenny Burns.
Yeah, and the other thing that I want to make sure that we highlight here is that Kenny Burns has been here, if memory serves, I'm not looking this up, for the entire duration of the PJ Fleck tenure thus far, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, and he's been an integral part of the success they've had, like you mentioned, at running back, you know, and that's been a big focus, too, of the offense, but he deserves credit there, and he absolutely deserves this opportunity, and I couldn't be more excited for him. I imagine many Gopher fans will be rooting for Kent State when Maction is on a Tuesday or a Thursday night. In the end, we'll have a rooting interest in the MAC.
100%. So we'll have to see what it all looks like for Kenny Burns, because it's, like I said, that team's not going to be very good out of Kent State next year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to what we think the leadership in the offensive side of the football is going to be. Obviously, Kirk Scirocco was the offensive coordinator and, well, co-offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. So let's start there. Quarterbacks coach. This was a little bit of a surprise to me, Ryan. I when you mentioned that Greg Harbaugh is going to take over the quarterback position, jumping from tight end, I didn't really know the history that he and Scirocco had together. And I know he'd been a wide receiver coach out at Western Michigan for a while. But yeah, give us the backstory here on why he becomes the quarterback coach and the quarterback coach here at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, so Greg Harbaugh, now it's spelled exactly like Jim Harbaugh, but it is pronounced Harbaugh. That's going to be one of the things that folks are going to have to get their heads wrapped around. Because if you're going to scream at him into the ether, at least get his last name right. So Greg Harbaugh has been with PJ Fleck on and off since 2015. He was a grad assistant at Western Michigan in 15 and 16 for Kirk Scirocco. And in many ways, I think of him necessarily as Kirk Scirocco's protege. And he spent a lot of time in the quarterback's room with Kirk Scirocco in 2015 and 2016 at Western. He comes over with Scirocco and PJ Fleck in that first year in 2017 to Minnesota as a quality control guy, again, helping out the offense any way he can. Spent a lot of time with the quarterbacks, left for a year in 18 to go to Chattanooga to be a position coach, comes back in 19 to work with Scirocco on the offense again. And then in 2021, 2020, he goes to Western Michigan as the receivers coach. And then he was hired back last year as the tight ends coach. And so he's now been elevated to that quarterback coach position. And I know one of the things that, you know, you get to see on Twitter, and again, Twitter is not an accurate representation of the world and what fans think, but I think it's so fascinating. Everybody gets so upset about like titles in terms of co-offensive coordinator, co-defensive coordinator, because I don't care about it. I don't understand why people do, other than it's just a title. Because, I mean, there's only one play caller on each side of the ball, and now we don't know definitively who that's going to be yet. PJ Fleck has not made that known quite yet. But I would imagine, if I'm going to read the tea leaves, considering that Fleck, I think, has said historically he wants the quarterback coach to be the play caller.
Yes, he has said that.
It leads me to assume that Greg Harbaugh is going to be the guy. Now, whether it is Matt Simon or Greg Harbaugh, they both have limited play calling experience. Matt Simon has called, I think, two bowl games, and then Greg Harbaugh called a couple of games in November at the end of, I believe, the 2021 season for Western Michigan, and they had some success there. So either way, it's going to be more or less a green play caller. Now, we're going to see how it all works, and we'll get to some of the analysts that Minnesota's hired and how that all factors into it. But the thing I think I'm excited about is, with peace and love to my favorite Kirk Ciarrocca, now the quarterback's coach and the co-offensive coordinator is going to give a lot more effort in recruiting.
Yeah.
Kirk wasn't...
when you told...
Look, I don't mean to like just negate the guy now that he's gone, but
he didn't put
energy
effort
and effort there wasn't at the level of someone like Greg Harbaugh, who I think is actually Minnesota's best recruiter. So,
yeah,
I think once Greg gets his quarterback, which I would imagine is going to be here in the next couple months, I would anticipate him helping at other positions, which I cannot stress to you how much, I mean, just having more energy and effort put into recruiting, especially at the quarterback position, is going to be a good thing for Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that Rutgers fans are quickly realizing. They're like, wait, and this guy doesn't really recruit, and we're paying him how much, right? Like, oh, they got to be frustrated.
Yeah, that's the thing. Greg Harbaugh is going to be making $600,000 now. That's quite a lofty raise for him, because last year he made $230,000, and I was going to be making $600,000. But point being, Kirk was set to make $900,000, so in theory, Fleck saves about $300,000 in terms of what he was going to spend potentially on the quarterbacks coach, co-offensive coordinator, and potential play caller. So, again, we don't know definitively, because Fleck hasn't said one way or another who's calling the plays, but my tea leaves, again, just from what Fleck has said historically, it leads me to believe that it's going to be Harbaugh, but we'll have to find out here in the spring.
All right, let's get to the other co-offensive coordinator real quick. You know, could be also calling plays. We're not entirely sure. I actually, here's my idea. All right, I think that we should get the two best like Madden or NCAA football players on the team. All right, and Simon and Harbaugh should have to call plays for those two players. We'll live stream it on Twitch. Winner gets to call plays for the 2023 season. Who wouldn't sign up for that? They might even pay for it. What do you think?
You're the absolute worst.
All right.
The other thing I would mention with the other tea leaves I'm kind of reading there is,
yeah,
Harbaugh was up in the booth with Ciarrocca the last,
sure,
well, at least last year, and Simon has been historically down on the field. So again, I'm more going to have to find out who's where. But
yeah,
if last year was any indication, that's kind of another tea leaf I'm kind of reading about Harbaugh. But Matt Simon remains the co-offensive coordinator, because I think people have forgot he's been the co-offensive coordinator for like 4 years now.
Right, exactly.
Yet when it was announced in January, everybody lost their mind again.
Right.
But he gets a nice bump from $430,000 to $600,000. So he and Harbaugh both making $600,000 now.
Yeah, not bad for them, or not bad for him. And a good reminder too is that when he called games, he called those from the box, right? So he did move up, if memory serves correctly, in those two bowl games. So also, I think there's a running game coordinator as well, Brian Callahan. I think that is part of his title as well as well as offensive line coach. Maybe we should get over his salary increase as well.
Yep, he went from $465,000 to $600,000. So he's going to be making – Harbaugh and Simon are all making the same. They're the top paid assistants on offense, $600,000. The only other thing I'd note there is Callahan's contract is a – I think it's a four-year deal. It goes through 2026.
Oh, good for him.
That's very, very, very different for college football.
That's very rare. Yeah.
Yeah, like 60% of the 10 on-field assistants, I believe, for Minnesota, 50 or 60%. So 5 or 6 of them are on one-year deals. I think a couple of them are on two-year deals. And then Brian Callahan's out here with a deal through 2026. Well, the funny thing is everybody's going to say, well, $600,000 for an O-line coach, that's so much money. I think both Iowa and like that puts him like middle of the pack in the Big Ten. So it's important to have context here. And if you want to have any sort of context for any of these, I put out an article saying Minnesota Gopher coaching contract details where I can detail where they all stand amongst other things. But yeah, Callahan gets a nice bump considering the offensive line for Minnesota. The starting five has been all Big Ten, all five of them, honorable mention, or on one of the first three teams in back-to-back seasons. So that's quite the accomplishment for a guy like Brian Callahan.
All right, let's jump to running back coach. Obviously, Kenny Burns moves on. That's a big void to fill. And they filled that. And I have to take a stab at this name. Nick McKinnisick?
You are the absolute worst.
McKissick?
Nick McKissick, and then if you screw up the last part of his hyphenated last name,
Luke.
So help me.
Yeah. Okay. I got the Luke Park. I was questioning the McKissick, but okay, McKissick Luke. We add to the team hyphen names as well as we add a great hyphen.
It is truly remarkable that this team just has so many freaking hyphenated names.
There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just amazing for sure.
And so they had a position coach in Nick McKissick Luke, who is the running back coach at Northern Illinois the last three seasons. He was also the special teams coordinator, which I haven't heard any indication that he's going to be helping special teams here at the University of Minnesota, which here nor there. I don't feel like getting into all that yet. But the thing I would note about Nick McKissick Luke is two things. Number one, I know he had the Kenny Burns seal of approval. It sounds like he was potentially one of the names that Kenny passed along to PJ Fleck that was on a short list of guys that he would recommend for the job. And one of the reasons why would be wherever he's gone, the running game and specifically the running backs have been pretty good. I mean, you go all the way back to one of Luke's favorite college football players back in the Missouri Valley, back in his college days, Zach Zenner. He was the one that molded Zach Zenner out there for the South Dakota State, actually now FCS champion South Dakota State, Jackrabbits. He was the position coach for Zach Zenner. He then moved on to Youngstown State, where he had first team all Missouri Valley backs for three straight years. Then he goes to Northern Illinois, where he got some young running backs the last few years playing awfully well. So he's finally getting his shot here in Power 5, finally getting his shot in the Big Ten. So he is going to be taking over as the running back coach. Now, again, comes down to money, too. Fleck saves $180,000 because Kenny made $400,000 last year. Nick McKissick Luke is going to make $220,000, which is, I believe, somewhere around an $80,000 increase for him from what he was making at Northern Illinois. So Minnesota saves a little bit of cash, and they also get to have a new running back coach.
All right. One thing we probably need to touch on too here, Ryan, is that they added a graduate transfer at running back, Sean Tyler from, he was committed to Oklahoma State, but was at Western Michigan this last year. And this is a big get for them. I guess technically, is he enrolled in classes yet? So is he here or is
he's here?
Okay.
He's
enrolled. He is.
He's going through workouts.
Perfect. Okay.
So this would be the only kind of recruiting news we'll touch on is, since we spoke last, Luke, Minnesota signed a bunch of transfers, and one they actually flipped in early January was Sean Tyler, a guy that played for Greg Harbaugh out at Western Michigan in 2020, 2021, someone that has been second team All-MAC conference the last two seasons for the run as a running back, has run for 1,000-plus yards in back-to-back seasons. And what I'll say is this, when Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon took over and Kenny Burns left, that's when they decided that they wanted to potentially bring in, they had a change of heart and said, we want to potentially add a transfer running back.
Yeah.
Well, Sean Tyler's got 1 year left. And from what I've been told, actually had some draftable running back grades considering what he had put on tape in the MAC. And And Minnesota was able to reach out to him. He's very familiar with Greg Harbaugh, and he decided to flip from Oklahoma State and come to Minnesota. So what does that mean? I put it in my too early depth chart, which you can read on free, which you can read for free on Gopher Illustrated. But to me, he's immediately the most explosive running back in the running back room. He might be the most explosive running back the Minnesota's had in the running back room in the PJ Fleck era. You know, some of the things I've heard since he's been on campus here is he and Kristen Hoskins are the two fastest guys on the team. And I've heard that Sean Tyler is running legitimately in the 4.4s. I've even heard about some hand time 4.3s. Now, he's not going to be a Muhammad Ibrahim type of back where getting 25, 30 carries a game. Probably is going to get around 15-ish. But that's where he is very good and very efficient on the carries he's got. And that's essentially what he's got at Western Michigan throughout the last couple of seasons is he's not getting these 1,000-yard seasons on a ton of carries. He's averaging 15, 18 carries a game, but he's able to house them. When he gets into the open field, he's not going to be caught. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I would add is you and I have been screaming into the ether for years to get some more explosive plays in the return game. Sean Tyler has 3 career kickoff return touchdowns as well. So instead of Clay Geary back there with Q Redding, I would imagine it's also going to be Sean Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense because, like, one, I'd like to see how he plays in the pass game as well to see if they incorporate more of a pass and maybe even a screen game. But, like, to your point, Ryan, they absolutely needed someone that can help and be a bonus on special teams, and this definitely fits that. And then you add a safety net at running back where you're really high on some guys, but you have something a little bit more proven, which is never a bad thing, right? That's never a bad thing to have a proven commodity. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the vacated tight end coach position, which was vacated by Greg Harbaugh, and they add Andrew Soder, who spent the last 5 seasons as the Kent State offensive coordinator. So, again, interesting connection back to the MAC and where Kenny Burns is now the head coach.
Yeah, he's not the only MAC offensive coordinator that is now on staff here. We'll get to that in a second. But one of the finalists for that Kent State open position that eventually went to Kenny Burns was Andrew Soder, someone that had a top-3 offense or helped design a top-3 offense the last few seasons in the MAC. And you're thinking to yourself, why would a MAC offensive coordinator want to come to the University of Minnesota? You've probably got other opportunities. Why would he want to come be the tight ends coach? Well, he has some familiarity with offensive line coach Brian Callahan. They were both with the most handsome man in the NFL, and Jimmy Garoppolo, back at one of your favorite universities, a former stop on the Luke Buehr tour, Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where were you there? A couple weeks, a semester?
I think it was for lunch once. Yeah, it was so good.
They were on staff together in 2012, and that's where the connection is to how does Andrew Soder kind of have an in here at the University of Minnesota? Well, when he didn't get retained by Kenny Burns, didn't get the Kent State head coaching job, he was looking for his position. And again, I'm all for taking guys with new ideas for this offense.
Yeah,
because I think we can agree that, you know, as much as I enjoy watching inside outside zone and then the occasional RPO, there has to be some new ideas introduced into this offense. And Kent State's offense is very different than Minnesota's. Now, Andrew Soder, while he was the offensive coordinator, was not the play caller. That was Sean Lewis, who was the head coach, who's now the Colorado offensive coordinator. But for Soder, it makes a lot of sense. He finally gets a shot in the Big Ten. He gets to have some input on the offense. And he gets to coach a position that I think is set pretty well for the immediate and the long term in terms of a Brevin Spanford, arguably the best returning Big Ten tight end. And then you also have a guy like Jameson Gears, who I know they're really excited about. So you add a little bit of new blood into the offense, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't hurt to have a unique perspective, an outside perspective that hasn't been there a long time. And, you know, I think we all agree that this is a year to figure out, like, hey, where does the identity of this offense really lie? You know, if it's going to be the same thing we saw the last 3 years, it lies 100% with PJ Fleck. But yeah, new perspective is going to be valuable. Let's also talk, before we talk about the new names in the GA and like offensive analyst arena, Ryan, let's get a quick definition around offensive analysts and kind of what their role is, so that people kind of understand and place these people. You know, we all hear about how Alabama has like 25 analysts, and it's where like failed head coaches and or whatever go to, you know, find themselves and recoup. What give me your perspective on analysts and I'll give you mine.
Well, I think they're different in whatever institution they're working at. They're going to have different roles. And I think the thing to note is the NCAA finally passed a rule that I think goes into effect in August. So for fall camp, that these guys will be able to actually assist the on-the-field coaches with instruction during a practice, gives them maybe a little bit more hands-on experience. And that's where in the spring these guys can be on the field. They can watch, but they can't technically coach. But they can sit in the practice rooms and help. They can go over film. They can game plan. They can do whatever is assigned essentially to them by the offensive or defensive staff or the head coach. But how would you define it?
So, you know, I agree with you. I think that's a good take on that. You know, it depends on the institution. I often have looked at analyst roles as like an entrepreneur in residence almost, right? Where it's like, hey, here we are, we're coming in. I'm going to give you some ideas. I don't have a lot of, I can throw stuff at the wall, but I don't necessarily own it, right? I don't have to make the decisions, but I can be a brainstormer and an ideator within this group and within this team. We saw this is maybe what Shiraka was doing at West Virginia after his stint at Penn State. And oftentimes this might be an off year for someone to be able to jump from, you know, they were somewhere else and they're trying to get an opportunity as a offensive coordinator or maybe even a head coach, you know, the following year. And it's kind of a gap year in some ways for them. And some people can take multiple years. A reminder that Joe Rossi was an analyst for the Gophers before he was promoted to linebackers coach or defensive line coach. And then, then defensive coordinator. This isn't something that people are immune from, and it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, and so that's where Minnesota brings in two new analysts on offense and one on defense. And the way I understand it is I think both the offense and defense got a little bit of that chunk of the extra million that Fleck got for the assistants. And they said, here's your budget. You can dictate it however you want. You can split it up into two. You can pay one guy. So that's why the offense has two and the defense has one. So you have one young guy and one veteran, I would say, for the offense. And so the young guy would be Keegan O'Hara, someone that, boy, Luke, if you could be a graduate assistant for any school in any position in the entire country, I would probably have where he was last year and who he was working with probably in my top three, because he spent last year as a graduate assistant at Ohio State working with the Buckeye wide receivers who have like four first round picks out there. So that would work for me. And what the connection to Minnesota is he was a GA, I believe, at Western Michigan in 2020, 2021 with Greg Harbaugh, working with the receivers there. And now he gets to come to Minnesota, be an analyst, reunite with Greg Harbaugh. And then they also, you know, this hasn't been finalized yet, but it's just been out there, reported by multiple sources, and I can say myself that it sounds like it's going to happen. This is how it's pronounced, Luke, and it was very confusing to me when I heard this name for the first time.
Should I try and take a stab at it? I mean, this is my bet, right? I'm going to go with Eric Kaler.
Correct. And why is that confusing for people who might not get why?
Because it's K-O-E-H-L-E-R.
Is there an Eric Kaler at the University of Minnesota already?
No, Eric Kaler was the president that preceded the current president, and he was K-A-L-E-R, I believe.
But again, just the way it's pronounced, I was very confused when I heard that because I was thinking, the former president? He's bad. Why? What? So here's the story. Minnesota is also going to hire Eric Kaler, who for the last 9 seasons – has been the co-offensive coordinator at Miami of Ohio in the MAC. He's also been a quarterback coach in college football since 2009. But I like this a lot in terms of bringing in essentially a veteran quarterback coach who has done it for 15 years at various levels. He was also at Grand Valley State, Wartburg, before being in the MAC for the last X amount of years. But bringing a guy who's a veteran, has worked with quarterbacks, can sit in the room with Harbaugh if he needs help. He's got experience potentially with play calling if it is Greg Harbaugh. And he can just provide another voice that can help guide potentially this Minnesota offense. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, why would a co-offensive coordinator take an analyst gig? I will say again, in my mind, there's only so many Big Ten jobs out there. And if you've been kind of stuck in the MAC for the last 9 years, which Kaler has been more or less, he can come into the Big Ten in an analyst role. And for both of these guys, O'Hara and Kaler, if there's a position coach job that opens up potentially in the next year or two, well, if you've done good enough work on staff, if you've been meshing well with the coordinators and the coaches, there's probably a good chance that you're going to be hired as a position coach. So I'm excited about those two additions to that offensive room.
Yeah, and I think the precedent's already been set with PJ Fleck. He will hire within, right? He doesn't always go outside.
Correct.
Yep. So I think you're spot on with that take. All right, let's jump over to defense. Obviously, there's been some changes there as well. The ever rotating defensive line position or position coach is once again wheeled its ugly head. Brick Haley moves on, goes to rival Purdue. I think there's an interesting story here, Ryan, and then I've got an interesting story for you after you announce who is the new defensive line coach.
Oh Lord, yeah. So Brick Haley's gone, which I know there's a lot of Gopher fans that are sad to see that go. Now, again, do I place all of the blame on him for an underachieving defensive line room in 2022? No, I don't. Do I place probably the most amount in his bucket? I do. That there's just no reason to me that the D-line wasn't better in the pass rush than what they were. Now, the story is, the word around the program I had been hearing from in November into December was that he was telling people he was going to retire. And then I see that he's going to take the Purdue D-line coach, and you're thinking, so why would you want to go to Purdue? Well, he and Ryan Walters were together at Missouri. But I mean, I don't think it's a huge
I don't think it's a huge loss. And I think, frankly, you say you're going to you might say you're going to retire when you think you might get fired, right?
Probably.
I think that's or his contract not that crazy.
Been renewed. He wouldn't have necessarily been fired.
Right. I mean, that's quasi getting fired, but yeah.
January 31st.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, kind of is what it is. And again, that man was making $420,000. Last year, which for Minnesota staff is a lot of money. Now, come back is one of your favorite names to ever enunciate.
Oh, man.
Give it a shot once again.
Yeah, once again, Winston DeLatti Boudere, and I absolutely butchered that. I think that's really what started the bit.
I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely butchered it. I can say without a doubt it's Winston DeLatti Boudere III.
Correct. So he played for Fleck for 4 years, didn't sign with PJ, but played for him for 4 years, and then he goes into coaching. And in 2020, he goes with former Minnesota D-line coach Marcus West to Charlotte, where it sounds like West gave him glowing reviews. Goes to Oregon in 2021 as a grad assistant, works with Mario Cristobal, gets glowing reviews so much to the point where, as I believe, like a 22 or 23-year-old, last season he was at Akron with former Oregon coach Joe Moorhead, who brought him with as a first-time position coach, and it sounds like Moorhead gave him good reviews out there. So here's what I would say. I don't think Fleck's naive to the point where he's seen the amount of D-line coaching turnover, and I think he would tell you that he hopes this ends it with, I think Winston is now the youngest Power 5 position coach in college football at like 24 years old. So he's a Minnesota guy that has played for Fleck. This was where he got his degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not going to be making a ton of money, going to be making $200,000. So Fleck saved some more money to potentially pay his support staff, these analysts. And he's going to be green, certainly. But in the 3 years he's been in coaching, wherever he's gone, he's gotten good reviews. Now, this is where I will say he's going to have some help in terms of with the senior defensive analyst that Joe Rossi hired. And yet another hyphenated name. Because that's all Minnesota seems to sign, whether it's recruits or coaches, is Minnesota went out and got Yale assistant head coach Dennis Dotton Carter as their senior defensive analyst. And why that's important is he has been a college D-line coach since 2011. So he's been a D-line coach, I believe, for 12 years. He and Rossi were together back at Maine in 2008. So that's how it in the world does the Yale assistant head coach end up at the University of Minnesota. Well, he and Joe Rossi knew each other. So he's been a D-line coach at places like Maine, Delaware, where he was actually named the interim head coach for them once they fired their coach in 2016, UConn, and then most recently Yale. So while I mentioned earlier that these analysts can't help coach in practice until August, he's going to be right there helping Winston as a mentor and then in August on the field, because while Rob Wenger may have the title of Rush Ends coach, I have done more coaching of the Rush Ends in the last I have done as much coaching of Rush Ends in my lifetime as Rob Wenger has. So there will be more help coming for a green guy like Winston Delady-Boudere. And I'm going to answer your question once again. Why would the Yale assistant head coach want to come to Minnesota as an analyst? It's an opportunity on a Big Ten staff to help out. And if there's a guy that leaves, this guy can step in.
All right, here's my story. So last week I did an event with the Goal Line Club, who has sponsored this podcast for years, as well as Dinkytown Athletes. They did an event together for like a signing day social, and we had a number of Gopher football players there that we did kind of an on-stage interview, as well as people that attended were able to ask questions. One of which was Trill Carter, Ryan. And so Trill is up there and he goes, he's a great interview, by the way. He was phenomenal. And he literally says, y'all probably know that I've had a new D-line coach every year I've been here, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes, and now I got a coach who I'm not going to call coach because I played with him and we had a face-to-face conversation about how I'm not going to call him coach. And you know what? He's cool with it. So Winston will not be called coach. He will be called Winston by Trill Carter.
Well, they're probably like the same age.
They basically are. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So, but he said there's mutual respect there. He loves it. He's there. But I just thought that was hilarious that he's like, now I got a coach that I literally played with, who he's like, is my brother and like one of my best friends. And now he's my coach. And he said the first time he was here, I told him, I will not be calling you coach.
It's got to be like a weird, it's got to be a little weird for both Winston and guys like Trill.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, we're about the same age. I played with you.
Yes.
Like, again, that's where I think Rossi can obviously help. That's where Dennis Dotton Carter can obviously help too. But I think that's a funny story.
It's not going to create any friction. Trill was very excited about it, but he told a good story, and it was a great event. I'm sure that the Goal Line Club and Dinkytown Athletes will do more of those. So if you hear about them, go. It was really fun, and those athletes are really open and candid and honest, and it's a phenomenal thing. But man, that was just a funny story that stuck out and tied in closely with this conversation about Delady-Boudere. So
That's awesome.
We should also talk about Paul Haynes, who you and I interviewed once for an event for the Goal Line Club, moves on to Arrivals to the East, which I imagine didn't sit well with some of your message board subscribers.
No. So here's the story of Paul Haynes. I had been hearing his name connected to the Wisconsin job and Louisville for like most of December.
Also, have you looked up his Wikipedia page? The dude doesn't stay anywhere very long.
I have not, but that doesn't
he doesn't stay
me.
Anywhere very long. He stayed quite a while here at Minnesota, given his tenure. His longest tenure was while he was head coach at Kent State.
So I'm just laughing because it's like, Paul Haynes got fired from Kent State, and now Kenny Burns takes the Kent State job. Now, again, there was a coach in between there, but I wonder if Paul and Kenny had some discussions about what it was like to coach in Kent, Ohio. I'm sure they did, but I had been hearing Paul Haynes' name connected to the Wisconsin job and the Louisville job for some time. I think the way I kind of understand it from a few different people is I think Haynes knew he wasn't going to be the next guy when Rossi leaves. If they were going to go internal, I continue to hear Danny Collins' name, someone that was recently named to the AFCA 35 under 35 crew, someone that's been very highly thought of on the staff. I think he's done a really good job in recruiting as well.
Yeah. Let's also not neglect the fact that, you know, they were really high on the previous safeties coach, who's now the defensive coordinator at Rutgers, and who knows how long Schiano is going to last there. And, you know, that guy might be available, and, you know, highly they thought of him. So, and he'll have experience. Correct. So yeah, I totally see where you're going with this.
Yeah. So, and that's me. And that's the guy who had the co-defensive coordinator title last season, Paul Haynes, if he wasn't even going to be the potential number one guy internal. I think it made sense for him to get a change of scenery. I've been hearing about it. Sounds like he was going to take Louisville if Wisconsin finally didn't get back to him. Fickle and Haynes had worked together at Ohio State. So Paul Haynes leaves for Wisconsin. We'll see how he does there. But Minnesota hires...
Can you please?
One of us.
With a nickname
that I want to hear Luke Buehr say.
That you rarely... I heard this on your other podcast, Pair and a Spare. Great job by those guys. Justin, check your DMs. I got a question for you. I have to say this. How does the guy get the nickname Swag Daddy? Like, Nick Especially Monroe.
Peace and love to Nick Monroe, Minnesota's new corners coach.
I need to golf with this guy. Like, honestly.
I mean, my man's like a 45-year-old white guy who rocks a visor, and he calls himself the Swag Daddy.
That's amazing.
That's some confidence.
That's amazing.
So Minnesota goes out and hires Nick Monroe from Syracuse. Again, what's the connection, Ryan? Well, it's through Allegheny College, where Rossi and Monroe sort of crossed paths back in the early 2000s. But most importantly for some of the listeners, he's hashtag one of us. He's an East Metro guy, Luke. He is a Matamidi graduate, went to St. Cloud State as well. There's also a connection through his father, who was a graduate assistant for one of your favorite coaches, Jim Wacker, back in 1994.
So
Nick Monroe's dad was a graduate assistant for former Gopher football coach Jim Wacker back in 1994 as well.
So funny story, Jim Wacker was the head coach at Augustana where my dad was playing, or my dad didn't play football there, but all of his buddies played football. And so they all played for Jim Wacker. So when it didn't work out with the Gophers, you know, everybody was kind of disappointed because they're all Gopher fans and wanted him to succeed. But, you know, it didn't work out ultimately. So funny that we have the Swag Daddy. I'm really excited to see how this gets played up. I've liked some of the message board banter and some of the Twitter banter embracing the Swag Daddy. I'm all for this.
Yeah, so from what I've gathered from talking with my Syracuse people, they think the media does. He was their best recruiter, someone that had really developed their safety position where he was the coach. Now he's going to be transitioning to corners from Minnesota, but he developed three different safeties into draft picks at Syracuse, and I think they're going to have another one in this upcoming draft. So he's been kind of a proven guy in terms of a good defensive backs coach, someone that's going to be trying to recruit the areas of South Florida and then the New Jersey kind of area out there. Now, I want to see it before I'm going to start calling somebody the Swag Daddy. But in terms of
I love paper, it.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And he's going to be making $400,000 here at Minnesota. So essentially, it's a one-for-one swap in terms of salary from Paul Haynes to Nick Monroe. So we'll see how it works out here starting here in the spring.
All right, Ryan, let's get to your favorite thing to talk about when it comes to compensation.
What are you, Justin Guard?
Well, this I'm serious. You love this topic. You want to talk about assistant pay, where the Gophers line up. I recognize that, you know, they don't sit high enough for you, and that's fair. But I think the question for you is, we know in the recent contract that was executed to add another year for PJ Fleck onto his existing deal and the bump he got, he also got an extra $1 million in assistant pay. So Ryan, I know you've done your diligence here. We waited a long time to record this podcast because you wanted to have all the information from the Sports Information Office at the University of Minnesota. So please step onto your soapbox and let us hear it.
So Fleck gets an extra $1 million for his assistant pool, yet only essentially elects to use about $275,000 on his 10 non-field assistants. That puts that group at around $4.6 million. Now, why that bugs me is because that's so egregiously low compared to their two rivals. Iowa's 10 on-field assistants made $6.59 million last season. So Minnesota's at least $2 million behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wisconsin's made $5.64 last season. And I believe with Fickell's new deal, they're going to be more in the Iowa range. So it just comes down to Fleck just decides to allocate – only 28% essentially of that extra million in that he got to his assistants. Now, I'm not telling you he's right or wrong. I'm telling you that Rob Wenger gets another $20,000 to $365,000,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting use of money there. But even like Dan Nickel is now at $500,000. Minnesota's head strength coach, he got a nice $75,000 bump.
Good for him.
Which, again, I got the way Minnesota's played in the trenches. I mean, for me, that's the easiest spot to kind of see that.
Let me ask you a question. Here's what I don't know, and I haven't looked this up, and maybe you do and you don't know. But relative to, like, on-field experience as it comes to assistance at Iowa, let's use Iowa in particular. Like, I mean, pay Phil Parker, man. That guy puts out a great defense all the time. And pay a special teams coordinator whose name is escaping me now, right? He's phenomenal as well. But like, yeah, I have to imagine, you know, if you're looking at this competitively, you know, they have more years of experience and, you know, longer times at Iowa. I don't know that they have the turnover. And I'm not saying that the turnover is good nor bad, because frankly, it's the nature of a free market. But do you think that Minnesota's staff with experience is worthy of the $2 million difference?
I get what you're saying, because Nick McKissick, Luke, it's going to be his first year as a Power 5 assistant coach. Same thing with Winston Delatte-Boudere. Same thing with Andrew Soder. And then you have Nick Monroe, who's been at Syracuse. Like, I get what you're saying. It's just like you could have elected to then – I mean, you could have used some of this money to go get a more experienced guy, but you elected not to. And again – just because you pay someone more doesn't make them a better coach. And I get it, you know, fit's very important, but it's just, yes, you use some of this pay bump for your support staff, your strength staff, your recruiting staff. And that's where Minnesota has said, you know, some sources have told me that they think this is going to be their best recruiting staff for their 10 on-field guys.
Let's go. We need it. Yeah.
Well, here's what I'd say. I hear what you say, but I trust what you do.
Yeah.
So we're going to see if that ends up being that way. How do you end up justifying to me that – to me, it comes back down to Fleck now. Is you elected to essentially not get over that $5 million mark for your on-field assistants when your rivals are well into the six probably. We're going to see how it all pays out. That's, I guess, the way I would put it.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I think is interesting in how Fleck takes – or the approach he takes with – coaches, you know, he's talked about this too, where he wants them to grow and get the opportunities, which I think he's done, right? I don't know what's happened with other rival schools, if those guys are getting opportunities. But we have seen people like Marcus West, a good example. Did he go to defensive coordinator at Charlotte?
Yeah, he went to be the D coordinator at Charlotte. Now he's with the Buffalo Bills as like the assistant D line coach. So
okay. I mean, in the end, I don't know what these assistant coaches like goals are, but I would like to have assistant coaches that want to grow and have aspirations. And PJ has taken, you know, less experienced guys in general. Would you say that has hurt them? I know that it probably hurts them somewhat in recruiting because there's been a revolving door at defensive line, for instance. But like, generally speaking, I think he's found somewhat competent. We all kind of question the Mark Wenger employment status frequently, given the on-field performance of the special teams. But like, generally, I think he's done a good job. I know they speak really highly of Danny Collins. They found people to bring in, you know,
right. Like Greg Harbaugh is gone from GA to quality, you know, quality control to now he's going to be potentially calling the plays. You know, Danny Collins went from graduate assistant to now a 35 under 35 winner. And I would say everybody should be pretty dang happy the way Minnesota safeties played last year, whether it was Tyler Newbin, Jordan Howden, or Pinstripe Bowl MVP Coleman Bryson in his first start.
Yeah.
So I think they've done a good job of promoting within. It's just, I hate getting the extra million and then spending again. Now we'll see, now that Minnesota's finally into the analyst game, how much those guys will have an impact. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't know about that until
can analysts recruit?
I mean, they can DM and text, I would think.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't have any.
Can't be on the road, stuff like that.
All right. All right. So this is probably the part of the podcast here where we ask our Iowa friends to politely turn this off. You're probably not going to be very happy with this short conversation. But yeah, we are going to talk about the Brian Ferentz contract situation.
Very briefly, because again, we're not a – I just think it's fascinating that Brian Ferentz didn't follow new Patriots offensive coordinator who is at Alabama, Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien
came to me. Like, there is a lot of, I think, love between Ferentz and Bill O'Brien, and I'm shocked that he didn't follow him so he could get out of the Iowa thing, because after finishing 120th and 129th in yards per play the last two seasons, Brian Ferentz still has a job somehow, is making $850,000, which I think is a $50,000 pay decrease. But the two things I wanted to touch on before we get out of here is the two incentives that have made headlines nationally in the last 24 hours.
Which, can we just start by, I think it's kind of hilarious how rival fan bases, because there's literally nothing to talk about, have glommed onto this and kind of made a meme.
Of February where nothing's going on.
They've made basically like memes of this, but okay, yeah, get into the incentives built into the contract.
So Kirk Ferentz, his father, in case you didn't believe nepotism is alive and well within the Iowa program and in just big business everywhere, still in 2023, had a press conference on signing day where the media got after him quite a bit. And I think he made the statement, I don't know, don't believe it was verbatim, but it said something along the lines of 8 wins is not the standard. Well, clearly not, because the incentive in Brian Ferentz's new contract is he gets a bonus if they win 7 games.
And
seven.
If I remember correctly, because I did see like the tweet by Dockerman, who's a great follow if you are looking for someone to follow on Iowa Athletics. But it was the new contract said 7 wins and 25 points a game, not or and. So they need to have 7 wins and 25 points a game. And if I recall too, it did not stipulate 25 points per game offensively. So this can definitely be propped up.
Bill Parker should be getting a little bit of this, because I'll remind people, 25 points special per game would have ranked 82nd nationally last season in scoring offense, or just scoring.
There are
130 teams. That would have put you below average. But it's been so bad that 25 points per game is the standard, which is insane.
Well, actually, if you think about the KPI in general, right? Like, what does their defense hold opponents to, right? Something probably in the, like, 15 or under. I don't know what it was last year. Maybe it was even, like, 13. But, like, they're going to win most games they win by – they score 25 points.
It's going to be, like, 20 to 10. And I look at, like, the Iowa schedule, and I'm thinking to myself, Brian Ferentz is going to hit that incentive. He's going to have to run it up against Utah State and Western Michigan.
Well, I just think it's funny that like he got the decrease and then Ferentz makes the comment about 8 wins and then it's actually 7.
It's 7 wins.
That was the part that was funny to me.
For incentives to kick in Iowa.
I also think it's funny that literally there are these little sects of Twitter or like message boards where there's literally nothing, or maybe it might be on Reddit on RCFB. But like, honestly, this is all people want to talk about because there's nothing worth talking about anymore. It is literally the dead period right up until spring practices start. And this is all anyone has to talk about. So sorry, Iowa fans that, you know, listen to this to hopefully get some intel on Minnesota. We're not making fun of you or your team. I just think it's ironic that the metrics they set and then what Ferentz said versus what ended up in the contract. So that part was just funny to me.
So like Luke said, I mean, this is going to wrap it up for this one. We're hoping to have some things down the pipeline here yet in February, which we want your input on. We want you guys to give us your thoughts on them, but I'm excited about them.
Yeah.
So hopefully you learned at least a little bit more about the Gopher Football 2023 staff. Again, as always, 30% off on Gopher Illustrated, $1 for your first 30 days. But other than that, you got anything else, Luke?
No, like you said, we're excited to try something new. So keep your eye out for that. It'll be in the same feed if and when it gets started. We're working out some minor details here. Hopefully have it for you soon. Yeah, and again, we appreciate all of you listening. And most importantly, support Ryan in the work that he does on Gopher Illustrated. It's not only a fun community, but it's a good source of information. And, you know, support our sponsors in the past. Go to previous episodes. They make this podcast possible. And again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.